WOSU's Politics and a Pint is back, and we certainly have a lot to talk about. And wash down that political talk with a pint or two. It's Thursday, August 15th at 6 at 7th Sun Brewing in Italian Village. Go to WOSU.org/events to register.
Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. We like to think history unfolds at a steady pace, major events flowing from one to another over months or even years. But this year, this election cycle feels like someone hit 2x on the video speed. We've raced through campus protests, criminal trials, a historic debate, an assassination attempt, major rulings for and against Donald Trump, the end of Joe Biden's political career, the rise of Ohio's J.D. Vance, and Kamala Harris's incredibly quick campaign for president. It's exhausting, perhaps even unprecedented. Here to help us contextualize the chaos and predict what on earth may be coming next is Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. Welcome back to All Sides, Ken.
And I guarantee I will not be able to predict what comes next. I mean, this is not the year that anybody should be making any predictions. And, you know, you talk about the unprecedented nature of the campaign. You think 18 days ago is when former President Trump was an attempted on his life. And people were saying, you know, people who should know better saying the election is over. He has it won. This seals the deal. And then 10 days ago, which nobody saw coming, Joe Biden drops out of the race. As you point out, Kamala Harris becomes the de facto Democratic nominee, and the whole race gets turned upside down again. So I'd love to make predictions what may happen before November 5th or even by tomorrow, but I don't think I can do it. I don't think anybody can do it.
I don't think fantasy fiction writers can do it, but we have a new Republican ticket for president and a new Democratic nominee. Conventional political wisdom is that vice presidents are more likely to harm a campaign than help them. Given the news cycle since Ohio Senator J.D. Vance became the Republican VP pick, do you think it's going well for him?
No, I think the launch was very awkward. It was bad. It was poorly trotted out. It reminds me a little bit about Dan Quayle in 1988 when George Bush Sr. named Dan Quayle as his running mate at the New Orleans Republican convention. And almost immediately, Dan Quayle was hit by questions about his National Guard, how he got out of the service in Vietnam, and how he got into the National Guard. And that's all anybody focused on. Even with Geraldine Ferraro, who was a history-making vice presidential choice for Malta Mondale in 1984, the first woman on a national ticket, there were questions about her husband, John Zaccaro's, real estate dealings. So you know, you want everything to go smoothly. You want everybody to just have a great a great launching of a campaign. And a lot of it is J.D. Vance's own problems. I mean, he said some things in the past that, of course, a lot of people say things in the past, they don't think it'll come back to bite them. And it certainly has come back to bite J.D. Vance.
Yeah, the comments in particular deal with his opinion about women who choose not to have children. He has made a series of comments which continue to come out of the woodwork in the last week about childless cat ladies, about whether Democrats are childless sociopaths, whether people without children should pay more in taxes and have fewer voting rights.
And don't forget, drinking Mountain Dew is racist. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he's tried to walk back and clean up some of these comments. Here is J.D. Vance explaining why his cat lady comment in particular was taken out of context.
If you look at the full context of what I said, it's very clear the Democrats have tried to take this thing out of context and blow it out of proportion, which is what they always do, Trey, because they don't have an agenda to run on themselves.
So, you know, given...
Wait, he didn't say anything. If you listen to him, I mean, an interview on Fox, all he said was they taking it out of context, but he didn't explain anything. And there's really not much to explain. Basically, he said that women without children don't have a stake in the future of our country. And that's just so insulting to not only the thousands of women who can have children, but who decide not to have children. I mean, you know,
there's been a lot of bipartisan backlash to this.
Or the Republicans, a clear defense of what he was trying to say.
Yeah, I think it's because it resonates with people across all political stripes. You know, Meghan McCain has said things about this. You've heard from women all across the spectrum who had their feathers ruffled, not to use too many animal analogies in one conversation, but it's the idea of what does it mean to be a family? I mean, Kamala Harris is someone he named as being a, you know, childless person with no stake in the future, but she's a stepmother to two children from her husband's first marriage. And there is that question of, does that not count?
And Doug Imhoff's first wife, his ex-wife, has said that nobody was a better surrogate mother than Kamala Harris, you know, the stepmother who's with the children all the way. So even his ex-wife said she did an amazing job. You know, I can't believe that the only animal we were focused with was Kristi Noem, killing of a dog. And then, you know, she didn't become the vice president. So the person who did become vice president is caught with this childless cat lady stuff. It's, you know, Democrats who have been so much on the defensive all along about Joe Biden's age, about Joe Biden's stamina, about the way he handled himself during the June 27th debate. And they were all on the defensive, and suddenly, a switch was turned that is, then they now find themselves on the defensive.
You know, I've seen a lot of political think pieces about whether Donald Trump and the RNC have regrets about picking J.D. Vance as a running mate, about whether they picked him when they thought they were cruising to a landslide. Now, I don't know how much stock to put in these, and I also don't know how much stock to put in this idea that maybe Trump is thinking about replacing him on the ticket, because I don't even think that's possible, but never say never.
Well, it's absolutely possible. Remember, in 1972, George McGovern named Tom Eagleton as his vice presidential running mate. There were revelations about Tom Eagleton going through electric shock therapy and you know, mental health problems, and he got off the, you know, he was forced off the ticket, and McGovern named Sergeant Shriver as his vice president. So it's certainly doable, and it's certainly doable. You know, you could do it until October, basically. I guess you could. There's no stopping that. But Donald Trump never or hardly ever admits making a mistake, and dumping J.D. Vance from the ticket would obviously be the admitting of a mistake. The problem is that J.D. Vance really never added that much to the Trump ticket. I mean, Ohio was already ruby red. He didn't need Vance to carry Ohio. And basically, you know, maybe J.D. Vance was not so much a mini-me of Donald Trump, but a younger version of Donald Trump, and maybe the future of the Republican Party as a Trump kind of candidate. But as far as adding a state, adding a region, adding an ideology, balancing a ticket, J.D. Vance really did not do that when Trump named him.
While we're on the topic of vice presidential picks, Kamala Harris gets to select her own running mate this go around. And the list of candidates recently narrowed when North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper withdrew his name. There are a bunch of other names being bandied about: Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly. The internet seems to love the idea of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Who do you think is going to bring the most to the ticket?
Well, that's one of my favorite predictions. At least you can do that because you kind of know where you're coming from and what the list of names are. Actually, my prediction had been Roy Cooper. I thought North Carolina was in play. Donald Trump won it twice, but they had a chance of winning it with Roy Cooper, twice elected governor of North Carolina, four times elected attorney general, very popular in the state. But he's also 67 years old, which is older than, not as old as Donald Trump. Matter of fact, it's startling to me how Joe Biden once upon a time was the old guy in his campaign, and now suddenly it's Donald Trump who's the old guy. But I think Cooper pulling himself out, the smart money seems to be on Mark Kelly, the senator from Arizona. Let me just say that a lot of more people are predicting Mark Kelly than anyone else. Kelly is good on the border. Kamala Harris, as vice president, was assigned to deal with migrants, the migrant issue in the border. And let's just say, to be charitable, that she did not do a bang-up job with that. Whether it was possible to do it or not is another thing. But she didn't do a great job. Maybe Mark Kelly gives her protection for that. He's an astronaut. His family is a victim of gun violence. His wife is Gabby Giffords, the former congresswoman who was shot in the head years ago, and just an indication of the danger of gun violence in this country. He's a decorated war a soldier and things like that.
He ticks a lot of boxes.
He does. He does. I don't know if he's Mr. Excitement, but I don't know what that means anymore. Like, for example, you think, the greatest vice president was Kennedy picking Lyndon Johnson because he brought a state in the region. And that's true. But of course, nobody says that Barack Obama brought Joe Biden in because he can carry Delaware, or John McCain picked Sarah Palin because he could, get Alaska, and George W. Bush picking Dick Cheney because, oh my God, I've got to win Wyoming. And it's funny, you think of great or memorable tickets in the past. When Bill Clinton picked Al Gore, I mean, that, they were the same ideology, the same age, from a nearby state. It was almost, it complemented everything that Bill Clinton stood for. So it didn't bring a state, it didn't bring an ideology, and yet a lot of people thought that was an excellent choice. So there are a lot of different components to naming a ticket, and of course, Kamala Harris is going through that thinking right now.
Yeah, the Minnesota governor is also on the short list. We also hear about Kentucky's Andy Beshear.
Right, Tim Walz of Minnesota. I guess my prediction is Josh Shapiro. Now, look,
that's an interesting choice. Yeah.
Well, Josh Shapiro is Jewish. I mean, you should point that out. Of course, Joe Lieberman was Jewish when Al Gore picked him in 2000, and nobody harped on that. But again, you don't need me to point this out. Kamala Harris is an African-American woman, and there are a lot of considerations. People say, well, maybe she could name another woman like Gretchen Whitmer, but you can't have two women on the same ticket. I mean, well,
you could.
I've checked my notes. I've seen a lot of instances when there are two men on the same ticket. I have a feeling one day in the future, we're going to laugh and saying, oh, really? You can't have two women on the same ticket? That's a big deal. So, things are so like, look, I watch Pete Buttigieg, and I watch him on Fox News. I watch him on Jon Stewart. He is probably the most effective message a deliverer on the Democratic side. He's amazing.
He's been everywhere.
And he's great. I mean, I think he's articulate. He's effective. He doesn't back down from anybody.
But he's extremely even keeled in all of these conversations.
Yeah, that probably drives Republicans nuts too. Look, they expected to run against Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They were all set on that. And now it seems like, there are attacks on Kamala Harris, like she's a DEI choice. The old tropes about women and color are going to come out, and it's unfortunate. But, Willie Horton is not dead and buried. We're going to see a lot of that ugliness in the campaign. But again, this, I think so much of what Kamala Harris brings to the Democratic Party is a future that you did not see with Joe Biden.
Yes, Senator J.D. Vance privately told donors that running against Vice President Harris instead of President Biden has made the race more challenging. The Washington Post reported that Vance said, quote, all of us were hit with a little bit of a political sucker punch. It's bad news. She doesn't have the same baggage as Joe Biden. Obviously, the complaints about her age and her struggling to do the job no longer hold water.
But what's amazing is if you look now, the new thing is, in addition to a DEI choice, that it's a coup, that the Democrats forced a coup.
It's anti-democratic.
Yeah, anti-democratic. This is supposed to be the party of democracy. They forced Joe Biden out of the race. They illegally gave the nomination to Kamala Harris. Look, I think the Democrats probably would have been better off if Joe Biden had dropped out earlier and there was a little battle of some kind to get the nominee, and it would go to Kamala Harris, and that issue would go away. But I still think of like. When Hillary Clinton talked about the basket of deplorables, even people who defended, who liked, loved Hillary Clinton said, "Why would you say something like that? Why would you do something like that?" Now, of course, the J.D. Vance quote about childless cat ladies happened in 2021, so it's not a new quote, but sometimes, I mean, even Ken Rudin goes through things where he says things he shouldn't have said. I know it's impossible to imagine, but sometimes I say things that I regret. I know that J.D. Vance is going through that right now.
If the presidential election is driving you to drink, I'd like you to consider doing it with us here at WOSU. We're hosting another round of Politics in a Pint Thursday, August 15th at Seven Suns Brewing. Columbus on the Record host Mike Thompson and myself will lead a discussion about all the chaos of the 2024 election. Get tickets online at wosu.org/events. Coming up, we're talking about something Donald Trump may regret saying, the Israeli Prime Minister speaking to Congress, and whether there's going to be another presidential debate. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking all things national politics this hour with Political Junkie podcast host Ken Rudin. And Ken, Donald Trump is also in the news this week for saying something that he might later regret. We'd been talking about J.D. Vance's potential regret of his cat lady comments from a few years ago, but Trump has made headlines for suggesting that people may not need to vote again after November's election. What do you make of these strange comments from the presidential nominee?
Well, as strange as they were, and they were strange, I think the word everybody's using now is weird. Everything is weird. But Donald Trump had an opportunity to pull back on that with an interview on, I guess it was Fox News the other day. And maybe was it Megyn Kelly or was it Fox News? Anyway,
it was one of the two.
I'm sorry?
I said, I think it was one of the two. I can't remember either.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I mean, but he had the opportunity to walk it back. And basically what he's saying, it sounded to me, and maybe because I'm a conspiracy theorist, but he said that if you vote for me, he talked about Christians. If Christians vote for me, you're not going to have to vote again. Now, does that mean that there won't be free elections in 2028? Does that mean that once he's in power, you don't have to worry about ever voting again? Well, he didn't describe that. And of course, the left went ballistic and the Democrats said, wait a second, is this part of his authoritarianism plan that he's coming up with? But he didn't force anyone, off that subject. So I don't know what it means. He kind of likes, just like that Covfefe thing, back in the day.
Oh my goodness, that's a blast from the past.
Well, I'm just saying, and he refused to explain anything he says. Maybe he likes that everybody's obsessed with it, but maybe, some people say that, look, Donald Trump is telling us exactly what he will do. I mean, when he talked about how he'll be a dictator on not day one, but day two. Well, there are a lot of Democrats who fear that a lot of voting rights, a lot of individual rights will be taken away should he be elected. And that quote that, you know, of course, Donald Trump has a history of saying incendiary things that would have sunk any presidential candidate. I mean, anyone. I mean, you think of Rick Perry, whose presidential candidacy disappeared when he couldn't think of a third federal agency that he wanted to cut in a debate. You know, when he couldn't think of, well, I'm going to cut this, that the agency, that agency. And when he couldn't come up with a third, everybody mocked him and said, oh, your campaign is over. The things Donald Trump says, for everything from grabbing them in that famous Access America Hollywood bus tour, you know, that leaked tape, and the things he says, and yet, you know, yet he just has this charmed life. So I don't know what it means, and people should pay attention to it, just like anything else he says, that, you know, sometimes he really means what he says when it comes to things he'll be doing, and people need to pay attention.
One thing I do think we'll be able to take away from this election cycle is whether presidential debates actually matter. I sort of wonder whether President Joe Biden would have stepped down if we hadn't had that early, unusual, even unprecedented presidential debate.
I love that. I love how many times you use the word unprecedented, because it's true. This is a year for unprecedented precedents. I mean, and I've always said that, except for maybe 1980, when Ronald Reagan was really a master in the debate against Jimmy Carter, and they only had one debate in October of 1980, and Carter didn't want another debate, and he paid the price because he didn't have a chance to, like, rebut Reagan in a second debate. But I've always said that debates don't matter. Look, you would think of Lloyd Benson embarrassing Dan Quayle, you know, you're no Jack Kennedy, and everybody said, oh, that was great, that was great. And meanwhile, Bush Quayle ticket won 40 out of 50 states that year. So I don't know what debates mean. You know, Geraldine Ferraro handled the first George Bush in a VP debate. You know, don't you lecture me about foreign policy. And everybody said, wow, Ferraro was great. And you know, the Reagan-Bush ticket won 49 out of 50 states. So ultimately, my argument has always been debates don't really matter. And history proves it. But oh my goodness, did it matter in 2024? As fearful as a lot of people were about Joe Biden's mental acuity, and you could talk about he had a cold and the dog ate his homework and all the excuses you want to give, but it was a disastrous performance. And yes, that is what ended his candidacy.
Given the shift in whether debates matter, do you think Donald Trump debates Kamala Harris this September?
I don't know. There's been a lot of talk about it. Democrats are saying that he's trying to dodge, you know, just like he's trying to get rid of J.D. Vance. Now he's trying to end the debate against Harris, because after all, when he guaranteed a debate, it was with Joe Biden, not Kamala Harris. I can't imagine a debate not happening. Now, of course, Donald Trump did pull out of a debate in 2020 against Joe Biden, and there were only two debates, not three, for that reason. But I don't know, you know, I don't know what he's thinking. It depends on what the polls, you know. Joe Biden obviously wanted a debate this year because he was falling behind Donald Trump. Remember, Joe Biden's candidacy was on the rocks before the debate. Donald Trump was starting to open up a lead before the debate. So we'll see what the polls look like. My gut tells me that there will be at least one more debate, at least one Trump-Harris debate, but, you know, your guess is as good as mine.
I don't want to eulogize President Joe Biden, because he is still very much alive, but I do want to talk about his legacy, and I want to start with his announcement to the country just a couple of days ago that he was dropping out of the presidential race.
I revere this office, but I love my country more. It's been the honor of my life to serve as your president. But in the defense of democracy, which is at stake, I think it's more important than any title. I draw strength and I find joy in working for the American people. But this sacred task of perfecting our union is not about me, it's about you.
What did you take away from, again, I guess, President Biden's historic, unprecedented speech?
Well, oh, there's that word again. You know something? I there was a sadness when I watched the president during that speech, because remember, for the longest time, he said he was not dropping out. He was attacking other Democrats, those elites, for trying to suggest that he should get out of the race. So he didn't, I mean, in fairness, and what I think is frank honesty, he didn't get out of the race because he wanted to save democracy or he loved his party and he loved his country. He got out of the race because every Democrat abandoned Chip and abandoned him and said it's time to go. But it was, there was a certain sadness. Look, Joe Biden first ran for president in 1987. He's wanted to be president. You know, I was going to say he wanted to be president in the worst way, and sometimes he campaigned in the worst way, but he wanted to be president all his life. He finally got the job he wanted, and by most accounts, if not all accounts, he did a great job, given the fact that there were barely more Democrats than Republicans in Congress. And even now, I don't think that's the case anymore. Certainly, it's not the case in the House, and yet he got a lot accomplished, which is pretty remarkable. But you know, as I said, the feeling that he wasn't up for the job, he certainly has aged in the last 4 years. It was sad but inevitable that he would bow out. And you know, you got to give him credit. He didn't point fingers. He wasn't angry. There was no anger towards anybody. And the fact that within a day he endorsed Kamala Harris, you know, we always talked about bad blood between Obama and Biden people, and there was truth to that because Joe Biden really wanted to be Obama's successor, and clearly Obama said, no, it's Hillary, it should go to Hillary Clinton, and Joe Biden never liked that. But when it came time to choosing his successor, he was very magnanimous and showed a warm endorsement of his vice president.
And we don't know, obviously, how this election year is going to come to a conclusion. But in the last, in the last couple of days since Biden dropped out, Kamala Harris has broken all kinds of historic records for fundraising. She's become a viral sensation with Gen Z on TikTok, and she's gotten mass amounts of support from these truly gigantic Zoom calls with Black Women for Harris, White Women for Harris, White Dudes for Harris. There's been if anything, it feels like a totally new election.
Well, I think it absolutely is. I was thinking about that. I was looking at polls prior to Biden dropping out, and one poll showed 23% of Black vote going to Donald Trump, and that was just remarkable. I think
that would be huge.
That would have been huge and probably would have been the ball game, considering that it was the African-American vote that elected, that nominated and elected Joe Biden in 2020. But with Kamala Harris bringing new life, new blood to the Democratic ticket. Now, the polls are not, we don't know enough of polls, because it's only been, believe it or not, it's only been 10 days ago that Joe Biden dropped out. Yikes. But after the debate, Donald Trump had about a 3-point lead, an aggregate of 3 percentage points in the polls, and now it's under 2. It doesn't sound like a big change, but it seems to be going in the direction of Kamala Harris, and we'll see. Of course, we still have a Democratic convention coming up, and we always know that the candidate of their convention usually gets a boost. In 1988, for example, Michael Dukakis came out of his convention in Atlanta with a 17-point lead over George Bush. And, of course, that didn't last long, but conventions usually give the candidate a big boost. And given the fact that Kamala Harris already has momentum, that could only be, increased. With the convention. By the way, we're talking about Joe Biden's legacy. The fact is, now he doesn't have to campaign; he can be president. And one of the things he's trying to do, even though I don't think anyone thinks he has a snowball's chance of succeeding, but the call for Supreme Court reform, which everybody is in favor of, term limits for justices, a code of ethics for justices, and even if it's not going to happen, not with Republican strength, in Congress, because they Republicans love what the Supreme Court is doing and things like that. It shows that Joe Biden is not going to leave office quietly.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court in just a couple of minutes here. But first, I wanted to talk about the assassination attempt. I wanted to circle back to it because it's been less than a month, which is insane to think about. But a lot.
18 days.
I know. And the motive of the shooter who tried to take Donald Trump's life is still not clear. But the Secret Service director, Kimberly Cheadle, has resigned. She was under a lot of scrutiny related to what experts described as security lapses that allowed that gunman to get so close to the former president and fire off those shots. So, I mean, that was also big breaking news. Any other cycle, it would have been the news of the week. The U.S. Secret Service director has resigned.
Well, there are so many. First of all, she should have resigned. And there's so many questions that are still unanswered. The fact is that people, that witnesses saw a shooter on top of that unsecured building. I don't know how many yards away it was, but they saw a shooter. I don't know if they reported it to the Secret Service or should have reported it to the Secret Service. People saw him on the roof, then they didn't see him on the roof. I mean, the fact that was not part of the secured area for the Secret Service and people protecting the president is just unconscionable. And so I don't think she had a choice other than to resign. But that was just, had Donald Trump not turned his head, it's very possible the result would have been completely different. And I don't even want to think about what this country would look like with a successful assassination attempt.
Yeah, it wasn't just Republicans who've been critical of her. There is a congressional investigation. And Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez appeared incensed during her questioning of Cheadle by the fact that the perimeter around the rally site was hundreds of yards shorter than the range of an AR-15 style of weapon. And I found it fascinating if you saw the reaction to AOC's comments on social media. There were conservatives being like, oh, my goodness. I'm agreeing with her on this issue. You know, the world has gone topsy-turvy.
Well, no, I mean, sometimes Democrats do say sane things, just like sometimes Republicans say sane things. And you know, when you have an attempt on a presidential candidate's life, whether it's a Democrat, Republican, or, you know, a United Frog Party candidate, it just makes sense. It's not a partisan issue when you say something went wrong, something seriously went wrong, and the Secret Service dropped the ball. And so AOC said it, Jamie Raskin said it, other Democrats said it, as well as other Republicans. And questions need to be still asked, and I'm sure both parties will welcome any kind of inquiry into the matter.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed a joint session of Congress this week, and noticeably absent from the speech was Vice President Kamala Harris. Republicans have latched on to her decision not to attend the meeting, questioning whether she's anti-Jewish or anti-Israel.
Well, Donald Trump actually said that she's anti-Jewish, which is just remarkable. But I mean, you know, it's amazing. Donald Trump says these things and he doesn't have to defend it, whereas J.D. Vance and Kamala Harris will say things and they'll be on the, they'll be under the microscope for the next 3 months. But I mean, to say that she's anti-Jewish is part of Donald Trump's mantra about how Jews have no business ever voting Democrat. But you know, it's clear that by watching who applauded Netanyahu, you see that the Republicans love him. And the Democrats, while they support the response to the horrific Hamas attack of October 7th, they don't support the slaughter of Palestinian children, and that has happened as well. So the Democrats and Joe Biden, I thought, were in a tough position, whereas you want to defend your ally Israel into the right for survival. But at the same time, you don't want seeing a response that's not even proportionate to what Hamas did with the thousands and thousands of children being killed. But the Republicans believe in Israel. They always have. They like Netanyahu. And I kind of think it's kind of an interesting kind of a contradiction here, or a contrast here, whereas not everybody loves Jews, but everybody loves Israel. At least that's what I see with Republicans when it comes to what's going on in the Middle East. And the Democrats have a history of supporting Israel and voting, and Democrats voting on Israel. But the fact is, Netanyahu is linked quite justifiably to Donald Trump when it comes to foreign policy, and Democrats don't like that. And yes, and that's one reason why Kamala Harris and many Democrats stayed away from the speech.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, months ago we were talking about the uncommitted vote in places like Michigan and what that might mean in such a close election, particularly, I mean, Michigan is home to a large Muslim population, a large immigrant population, and there were concerns that perhaps Biden was losing support with the progressive left over his handling of Gaza and Israel. Yeah.
But on the other
hand, Harris still has
that
tightrope to walk. She doesn't get away from it.
Well, but here's the other possibility that Democrats who normally vote Jewish Democrats who will vote for their candidate may feel that Kamala Harris is too Palestinian, too pro-Palestinian. I don't know. I'm not saying that that's an issue, but they could look at it that way and think, well, if she's going to be, you know, I mean, the Republicans will obviously say she's pro-Hamas, which is beyond, you know, contempt, but there's a tightrope, as you say. There's a tightrope that Biden has been walking, that Harris is going to have to be walking, because, you know, to lose Jewish support, I mean, you know, it's not a nationwide concern, but in certain states, it could carry an electorate, and certainly Democrats losing Jews because over the Israeli policy could be very consequential.
We're talking this hour with Political Junkie podcast host Ken Rudin. Coming up, Biden may be heading out the door, but he's got big plans to reshape the U.S. Supreme Court. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
WOSU's Politics and a Pint is back, and we certainly have a lot to talk about. And wash down that political talk with a pint or two. It's Thursday, August 15th at 6 at 7th Sun Brewing in Italian Village. Go to WOSU.org/events to register.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're less than 100 days away from the 2024 presidential election and from an assassination attempt to a candidate withdrawing his re-election bid. This cycle has definitely been one for the books. Still with us to make sense of the chaos that is the 2024 election is Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. Ken, if anybody thought President Biden was going to slowly wind down his political career, they were wrong. In an op-ed for the Washington Post, Biden made the case for a major overhaul of the U.S. Supreme Court, pushing for 18-year term limits on justices, a binding ethics code, and a constitutional amendment overturning the court's recent decision on presidential immunity. Ken, I know presidents start to look at their legacies in their final months, but this feels particularly ambitious.
Well, if you define ambitious as something that the president would love to happen and probably won't happen, then you've defined it correctly. Because as much as the Democrats feel that the Supreme Court has run amok, that given the fact that the approval of the Supreme Court in every poll is the lowest it's been in memory, certainly in my lifetime, but even, I mean, I remember, you know, back in the 60s, the Earl Warren Court was considered too liberal, and a lot of conservatives were outraged. They want to impeach Earl Warren. But right now, it seems like it's a very ideological Supreme Court. And, you know, I mean, it seems like every decision goes Donald Trump's way, including the issuing of immunity in certain cases. So Joe Biden wants to do something about this. However, if you're gonna have term limits on justices, if you're gonna have a code of ethics on judges, but especially if you want to have a constitutional amendment on judges, well, to pass the constitutional amendment, I mean, you need 2/3 of the state of Congress, and you need three quarters of the state legislatures after Congress passes it. And given the fact that Republicans, they currently hold control of the House, they may lose it in November, but they're probably favored to pick up the Senate, control of the Senate. We'll see. It's everything is very close, but whatever it is, there are too many Republicans in both the House and Senate to make a constitutional amendment like that pass. So I don't know what Joe Biden could do with executive orders. I mean, we know that he obviously has powers that he has not used. And I think given the fact that he has like 96 days, well, I'm sorry, there's 96 days to the election, that's November 5th, and then you add until January 20th. So he doesn't have that much time, but he can use executive actions. I don't know what he could do regarding the Supreme Court, but certainly there's a strong feeling in this country that the court has gone beyond nonpartisan politics and it's gone on with an agenda, and Donald and Joe Biden would like to do everything he can to reverse that.
I will say, I do think that this is a less controversial idea than adding justices to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Oh, that was the worst decision ever. I mean, if Joe Biden, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but if Joe Biden was going to add judges to the Supreme Court, well, then Donald Trump gets elected and he'll add judges. You know, by the time we turn over, you know, it'll be 150 judges of the Supreme Court, and both sides will keep adding judges. So I agree with you. This is far less. I mean, why wouldn't you want a code of ethics? You know, why wouldn't you want a Supreme Court justice to show who's paying for your trips, who's buying you gifts, if they have a business before the court, and if there's conflicts of interest? How could that be controversial? But the Republicans will fight it tooth and nail.
Yeah, I was going to say, Biden didn't name names, but the idea of creating a code of ethics for the U.S. Supreme Court came following controversies about Republican appointees Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. Thomas has been reported to take all kinds of lavish trips and expensive vacations and gifts that might make somebody wonder, you know, what exactly is being bought. And then Samuel Alito's wife apparently is hanging controversial flags outside of their homes. So
thank you. Thank you for not naming names.
No, I'm saying Biden didn't, but it was really obvious who he was talking about in this situation. And if you were ever going to make a run at changing the Supreme Court, I will say this does feel like the moment. We've been talking about unprecedented times, but the Supreme Court has overturned a number of landmark legal precedents in the last 2 years. Affirmative action, federal deference on rulemaking, abortion, presidential immunity. Like they have definitely been a history-making court.
Yeah, but at the same time, I wonder if Democrats are saying that, you know, you have a 4-year presidential term. Joe Biden was elected in 2020. His term ends on January 20th, 2025. Why are you waiting, you know, 3 months before your term is up to make all these changes? So, I mean, you gotta, you know, Democrats will give him a lot of credit for trying, but there are a lot of things that, I don't know, about guns, about climate control. There are probably things that that, you know, he may have the power to have done on his own without having to rely on Congress. And, you know, just like Donald Trump said that Obama did all these executive orders and that's not fair. And then Trump winds up doing all those executive orders. That's what you do as president when you have a recalcitrant Congress, nipping at your heels. So maybe, you know, Biden has an opportunity to make some changes in the little time he has. But it just seems like it's just so late in his term as president.
We're about 2 weeks away from the Democratic National Convention. And, you know, we talked earlier about who might be the vice presidential nominee on that ticket. How do you see Democrats thinking about this particular convention? Because obviously all the planning that they had done up until 10 days ago just got thrown out the window.
Well, there's certainly nothing in history to compare it with. You know, when Lyndon Johnson, who was the last sitting president to drop out of the race, he dropped out in March of 1968. Only one primary had occurred, New Hampshire, unlike with Biden, when all the primaries are over. And of course, when he dropped out in 68, it was a disastrous, divisive Democratic convention in Chicago with you know, the anti-war protesters outside and the Mayor Daley police with the nightsticks. And you had, you know, and then Hubert Humphrey, who didn't enter a single primary, didn't win a single primary, comes out as the Democratic nominee. So there was a lot of anger in that, even though they barely lost the election to Richard Nixon that year. This time, even though you do have a president who has dropped out, even though you have a convention in Ohio, and even if you have a vice president who's likely to be the nominee, right now, at least, you know, how it feels right now is that there's such joy, there's such relief, there's such optimism. Sometimes I wonder if it's overblown, but there's optimism on the Democratic side that this could be a great convention. The problem is, it's one thing to yell out and espouse liberal policies and slogans and AOC and all that stuff, but ultimately you're going to have to win a general election, and you're going to have to move slightly to the center. So remember former positions that Kamala Harris took, like about ending fracking and you know, a single payer for insurance. I mean, those things obviously have to go by the wayside, because this can't be a San Francisco liberal convention. This has to be the future and fighting Donald Trump. And if it means swallowing some of her more progressive views, so be it. And you know, for the Democrats to win, they're going to have to unite against Donald Trump. And sometimes everybody won't get what they want. My only point is that there's some great celebrating go on. You're going to see it at the convention, which starts, I guess, August 19th. And although I think the VP decision may come as early as August 7th. But then after the convention is over, then Michigan counts, Wisconsin counts, Arizona counts, Georgia counts. And you're going to have to realize what your campaign needs to do to win if they're going to stop Donald Trump from returning to the White House.
Speaking of that general election, we used to say that all roads to the presidency led through Ohio, but I think that phrase is in dire need of some updating. Trump and Harris are holding rallies in Georgia this week in the same venue, just days apart. And Harris was pretty clear when she was there the other night. She said the path to the White House runs right through this state. Is Georgia going to be the critical state in this election, one of the critical states? I definitely think so now with Harris on the ticket.
Well, I kind of think that Pennsylvania may be the key state there, but you're absolutely right. You know, you think of Georgia after 2020, Raphael Warnock and Joel Ossoff, now, for the record, an African-American and a Jew, Democrats, were elected to the Senate, and that's what gave the Democratic Party control of the Senate, which they still have today because of what happened in Georgia. And Joe Biden won it in 2020 for the first time, I guess, since Bill Clinton. So it's a remarkable change of how important Georgia is. And you don't have to be an old person like myself to remember when Ohio was a swing state. I mean, you know, if John Kerry won 60,000 more votes in Ohio in 2004, he would have been elected president. Barack Obama carried Ohio twice. But that Ohio seems like a million years ago, and it's states like, again, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Nevada, those are the states that will determine the next president. And basically, nobody else's vote matters. Isn't that incredible? Like, I mean, if you're a Democrat in Texas or you're a Republican in California, really, your vote doesn't really matter that much because it's obviously electoral college and not popular vote. And I think if only six states in the country matter, that says something about what's wrong with our political system here.
And just a reminder that if you need a drink after listening to this hour,
I
you
do.
Should... Well, then you should consider coming and doing it with us at WOSU. We're hosting another round of Politics in a Pint on Thursday, August 15th at Seven Suns Brewing. It's going to be me and Columbus on the Record host Mike Thompson moderating a panel about the 2024 election. You can get your tickets at WOSU.org/events. And Ken, it's come to that time. You are totally welcome to come. You have a standing invitation to come to any Politics in a Pint. We've got another one coming up in October. But I do want to say thank you so much for your time this morning.
I hope everybody is energized. It's an incredible campaign. It's an incredible year. And there's no excuse for not voting, no matter which way you vote.
I agree. Don't forget to register. Our registration here in Ohio closes at the end of September. Thank you so much for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.